Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Mr. McKillen. He knows my nose looks better when it's not black. It's all about being on the web. You already know that, right? Anyway, today I thought I would continue with something that I started almost 2 full years ago and that I've continued since, and today there's the next to the last, so you can look forward to the end. Hopefully next message will be the last of the Beatitudes, and then I do expect and hope to be able to present a summary message on that, because it's such a critical and vital subject, and then we'll go on to the next thing. We look at the world today that is in some ways a new world. For those of you who are 20 or less, you have no way to relate to this really, because it's always been your world. But those of you who are 20 and more, or have been aware of things for 20 or more years, so you'd probably be 35 and older, it is a new world in some ways. We have the internet fully functioning, generally speaking, very fast, with access to just about anything you dream up. As my daughter often tells me, Daddy, just Google it. And if you just Google it, you can find almost anything, particularly if you become good at knowing what search terms to put in there. There's never-ending media exposure about everything. Everyone's past, as we have seen with President Trump, with the governor in a Western state recently, with people in the arts, and Hollywood, and others. Anyone's past can be brought up to the surface, and the standards of judgment that operate in a court system do not operate in the media. So you are basically guilty before you can prove your innocence, and even if you can prove your innocence after that, you're still guilty. That's how the world has been turning, and that's the way it is going. And your past can be just split open and put under a microscope, and people will come to whatever conclusions they want to. With or without critical thinking, with or without faulty reasoning, they'll come to their conclusions, and that becomes, in some mind, an established fact. My mistakes, your wrong decisions, someone else's faulty reasoning is now exposed, and many people will just jump in this bandwagon of judgment. Careers are altered. Relationships are destroyed, future potential can be neutralized. All because of something that was done 20, 30, 40 years ago. There's no statute of limitations. If you paid for the crime, it doesn't matter. In the justice system, it's similar. Once a felon, always a felon. It doesn't matter if you spend 20 years in jail and they paid for it in the penitentiary, you come out, you're still a felon, you're still limited in what you can do because you have this felony crime in your history. You paid for it, but not really. You'll pay until you die. And so, this is what's going on out there. But on the other hand, there's this very, very small world, which is the small world in which we live, in which the members of the Church of God, the true followers of Christ, live. It's a very small world. And in this world, we are called to look at people and at each other in a very different way, with a different set of eyes, precisely because we know, or should know, our faults, our shortcomings, and our errors in the past. So let us examine today another attitude of being, generally called the Beatitudes or the Beatitudes, into which we are expected to grow by what our Master and King clearly states, and that is essential for us to cultivate, to obtain, to cement into our beings, if we can put it that way, as true followers of Christ. Matthew 5, and verse 7, Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Now, these attitudes, as I have proposed in the past, are in fact composites. They are composites of different character traits that Christ exhibited, that we are expected to develop, that are developed under the circumstances, as related in the past, of obedience to specific commands that God gives. Every time we engage in a type of action, our entire being changes. It changes spiritually, changes emotionally, changes physically. There are clear indications in the sciences, particularly epigenetics, that behavior, good and bad, changes the expression of our genes, so that ultimately, really, as a human being made of matter, we change because we have changed behavior under the directive of what God tells us in his word. And so this is very important. And the elements that I would like to discuss today are only three elements. There are more, but there's only time for three. The first one is sensitivity. In order to exercise mercy, we need that. Compassion. Again, to exercise mercy, compassion has to be together with sensitivity. And finally, today, forgiveness. Forgiveness is essential in the exercise of mercy. These three together will build up almost the totality of what it is to become a being that is inherently merciful, who can live from a standpoint of mercy and from that platform extend mercy out of his being into those who are the offenders. So sensitivity. One of the things that we as merciful people or people developing the characteristic of being a being of mercy need to look at is that in dealing with people, it's very important that we realize that often people act out in offensive ways, in ways that are hurtful to another human being, often because of things that are rooted in the past, in past hurts. One of the things that has been promulgated a lot, and I'm sorry, I've been, since the feast in France, I've been having issues with my nose, and I don't seem to be able to quiet down completely. One of the things that has been dredged out of the past is that often when a person commits offenses in a certain area of behavior, they have suffered as children or as adolescents in that area of behavior. Often a sexual abuser was abused sexually. So these things are passed on and interact. And so to exercise mercy, we need to have some understanding of what's going on inside the life of this individual. It's, you know, the proverbial, we're talking and somebody goes by and they're gruff and we go, oh, must have gotten up the wrong side of the bed. Well, that's just one of the things. There may be other things going on in the past of the individual that were dredged up recently, that they were confronted with recently, that just sends up a storm inside. And then behavior comes out of that that is offensive and hurtful to other people. And so this sensitivity to this ability to know the individual, to be aware of the hopes and at least some of the hurts that have happened to them in the past helps us to see them in a different light than if we just look at ourselves as being the victims of that offense, whatever it may be, for no reasons that we can think of. So to that extent, we have to get to know, whenever possible, those people who cause some offense to us. One of the things that happens, let's look at Matthew 7:12, because Christ gives us very specific instructions. He says, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Essentially, the entire Old Testament is hanging on this one statement. And in order to do this, we have several things that we need to do. One of the things that we need to do, we need to have and or develop or ask God to give us the ability, the capacity to adapt our response to the offender. Every human being is similar to other human beings, but every human being is also different from other human beings. And therefore, a person who comes and calls me a real ugly name does not necessarily react well to the same treatment I gave to another person who called me the same ugly name. Because they are, in fact, different individuals, and the reasons why they are calling me that ugly name may be totally separate, totally different from each other. And so we need to be able to adapt our response to the offender. Romans 12. Romans 12. And verse 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice. We need to be able to see they are in fact rejoicing, and sometimes it's not obvious. And we also need to see that they are mourning. Mourn with those who mourn. We need to develop that ability and adapt. This one is rejoicing in this circumstance, and I will rejoice with them and be encouraging and supportive of that. This one is mourning in this other circumstance, and I need to be able to adapt to that and mourn with that individual, even though it's not my problem, it's not my loss, but because of sensitivity to what's going on in that person's life, we adapt. We go and we parlance out there. We mirror their behavior, their feelings. That's one of the things that happens. The other thing is, we have to, of course, in relating back to the individual, questioning, why is this happening? Why are you doing this? Why did you treat me that way? We need to be careful, of course, with words. Words are very powerful. Book of Proverbs. Proverbs and chapter 12, verse 18. Proverbs 12, 18. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword. So maybe we were dealt words that felt like the piercings of a sword. But the tongue of the wise promotes health. The response of the followers of Christ has to be such that even though they were pierced, understanding where the individual is coming from, understanding the past hurts of this individual, we're going to respond with words that bring healing to that individual's psyche, to his spirit, to his emotional makeup. And this is something that, of course, is not done automatically. It's something that we need to labor on, to meditate upon in order to be able to come from that standpoint. Also, of course, we have a heart-to-heart, spirit-to-spirit communication, something that only human beings can do. We have God's spirit in addition to the human spirit. The person in front of us who offended us or tried to offend us may only have the spirit in man, but we're still able to communicate spirit to spirit if we are attentive to the things that were just said right before. Because of that, we have the power to do that. Now, how do we develop sensitivity? We have an example in the Old Testament in 2 Kings. A wonderful young, very young king, King Josiah, who has some wonderful things happening, and God speaks very highly of him. 2 Kings 22:2, just the beginning of the verse, and he did what was right in the sight of the Lord. So one way to develop sensitivity toward other individuals is to purpose, first of all, to please God. We cannot really please people very well, not in a deep sense, not in a sense that promotes healing of whatever leads them to treat us in a poor, offensive, or hurtful way, unless we please God first. So developing this is essential. Then you have to choose a good role model. Christ is, of course, the top-notch role model that we follow. But in this case, we see that also King Josiah walked in all the ways of his father David. He picked a man whom God describes, the only man that I'm aware of described such in the Bible, a man after God's own heart. He picked that example and walked in his ways, as opposed to the example of his father, who had been one of the worst kings in Israel's history. And so by doing this, he chose this role model that led him to do better than having to reinvent the wheel, so to speak, by himself. And then thirdly, he balanced his walk in this narrow path. Many of us probably have seen on TV people walking across a chasm on just a cable with a long bar to assist with balancing. that's basically what King Josiah had to do. There were all these forces from the right and from the left. And by trying and making an effort to please God, and by following an example of King David, he was basically put on a very narrow path. And this is only possible if you live a balanced life. He had to balance all his public life with his personal life, his mental and emotional life. All of that had to be balanced on this very narrow path he was walking in order to please God, in order to follow in the good parts of the example of his forefather, King David. So he says here, he did not turn aside to the right hand, not to the left. And of course, if you traverse in a chasm on a cable, you cannot go right or left. You have to be 100% centered on that half-inch space below your feet in order to be able to traverse the place safely. The other thing that he did, which was very important, is that they discovered as he went through the process of trying to reignite the worship of the true God in the temple and in some of the repairs that they were making, they found a scroll of the law, and they brought it to the king, and they read it before him. And so in verse 11 we see, "Now it happened, when the king heard the words of the book of the law, that he tore his clothes." The man was disgusted, was upset, was worried, was fearful, was concerned for the nation, hearing what God had to say would happen to a nation that deviated from his path, and he knew the history of the prior two kings, how terrible things had been. And so he tore his clothes. He humbled himself before the very word of God in writing. Now, God rewarded the king. We read later on verse 19. "Because your heart was tender, and you humbled yourself before the Lord when you heard what I spoke against this place and against its inhabitants, that they would become a desolation and a curse, and you tore your clothes and wept before me. I also have heard you, says the Lord. Surely," verse 20, "therefore, because of what you did, because you humbled yourself before me, I will gather you to your fathers, and you shall be gathered unto your grave in peace, and your eyes shall not see all the calamity which I will bring to this place." So they brought back this word to the king when he had inquired. So that's a wonderful reward. And eventually, God's final tribute to Josiah, which we read in chapter 23 and verse 25, it says, "Now, before him, there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses, nor after him did any arise like him." And in this sense, even though King David was unique, that he had a heart after God's heart, in that sense, he may have surpassed even King David in the way that he wholeheartedly followed God, starting at a very early age, because he ascended the throne at age 8. So the next thing that happens now is the characteristic or character quality of compassion. Now, today we live in what clearly can be easily described as a cold-hearted world. The media exposure in massive amounts to iniquity in any form we can describe has a very negative and downward trend in the way that our heart operates, and it in fact can make our hearts cold, as Christ clearly warned us when they asked him what would be the signs of the end time. One of the warnings was that because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. And when the wax is cold, it's brittle. It's hard, it's not malleable, you can't really do anything with it other than throw it at somebody, you know, as a weapon. But you have to warm it up in order to be able to mold it. You have to melt it in order to be able to make it into whatever you want to make, like with beehives, for instance, to create a base for the bees to work from. It has to be melted, it has to be going through that heating process that softens it up. And so the people's hearts exposed to iniquity little by little become colder and colder and incapable more and more of expressing mercy, of expressing particularly compassion. Let's look at Matthew 9:38 because there's a description there. Matthew 9, verse 38. Starting in verse 37, then he said to his disciples, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. The Lord of the harvest wants more people harvested, but there are not sufficient laborers. A matter of compassion is to pray that God will send more laborers so that more people can be harvested for God. It's a very important thing to do. And what we see in developing compassion, we see it from the examples that are shown. We see that compassion is a deep longing to respond to a need that we see, to a need that's somehow brought to our attention. Either we see it directly, or someone tells us about it, or it's in the media, or we hear at church. There's this need that is made clear to us, and we develop this longing to respond to the need and meet the need. There's an expression, bowels of compassion, from the Greek splachnon. Splachnon, part of which can be derived into the word spleen, is a yearning inwardly, a tender love. One is moved with compassion. Compassion moves our emotions and changes our biochemistry, how we react to things and how we feel. All of it is biochemically supported. The Hebrew, on the other hand, racham, tender affection, mercy. To get to the point where you feel this for someone who offends you, who hurts your feelings, who seems to have it in them to do anything to make your life difficult and miserable. It's not an easy thing to do. It can only be done with the power of God's Spirit. And yet, it's the same thing in a similar way to what parents feel for their children and to what God certainly feels for his people when he has pity and spares the offenders. It's that quality that is part of God's character and that we must cultivate as a building block, as a column of support, if you wish, for the ability to be transformed and become a merciful individual. So to develop this, we need to allow ourselves, we need to cultivate the ability to be stirred up by urgent needs for help. And usually it's almost automatic. If we see a real urgent need, how many of us have seen, I just saw one the other day, a car went off the road and plunged into the water, and this young man just stopped his car and run and jumped over the barrier. I mean, it's like no thought process. It's an automatic thing. Jumped in, jumped into the water, went in, managed to be able to open the door of the car, went under, pulled the lady out, and then she said something that we couldn't hear in the video, and then he went back inside the car and pulled the dog out. And so he was able to bring both safety to the margin. This is an immediate reaction of a heart that hasn't been hardened, that doesn't just say, well, too bad, so sad, you know. It happens to anybody, it happened to you, oh well, you know. It's a heart that has developed this, and we see it, for instance, in examples in the scriptures, Exodus 2. You would think this lady, high-bred, learning probably from a very young age to hate the slaves, the princess, the daughter of Pharaoh, Exodus 2:6. And when she opened the basket where baby Moses was floating, when she opened the basket, she saw the child. And behold, the baby wept. It's not clear to me whether the baby was already weeping or was quiet and opening the basket and perhaps being struck by light straight on the face made him start crying, but the baby wept. So she had compassion on him. Bowels of compassion. And if you have been struck that way by compassion for someone sometimes, you know exactly what the scripture is talking about. something inside you moves. And it's a very emotional grip that just grabs your inner organs, and as a being, you feel caught on this thing. It can be very powerful. So she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." The fact that he was a baby of a slave, the fact that there was an edict from her father to destroy all such male children, made no difference to her. Her heart went out to this baby, and as we know, she hired the mother to actually be the wet nurse for the baby and take care of him until he could be weaned. Wonderful act of compassion. We also see the example of Christ having this inner reaction of his being as a human being, God in the flesh and yet very human as any of us is, because he was fully human as well as identity-wise fully God. In Luke 7:13, Luke 7 and verse 13. When the Lord saw her, and this is the case where the widow was walking out to bury her son following the box, so perhaps a carrying base where they carried the body of her son to be buried. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion. Had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." Then he came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." Compassion for this mother. And who knows if in part he was looking ahead to the day, not too far into the future, when he also would be dead and buried. And someone had to have compassion for his mother, only he wouldn't be brought up for 3 days. We also see another example of his compassion developing from what he was observing in chapter 10, verses 30 and 33. Then Jesus answered and said, "A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead." And we know the story, who went by first. But in the end, a despised Samaritan went by. He came where he was, verse 33. And when he saw him, something in the wounds and the state of the man brought him to compassion. And from compassion, then he took action. See, sensitivity allows us to understand the individual so that compassion can develop, so that actions can be taken. This is often also activated when we see humble requests or pleas for help. Matthew 20. Matthew 20, 30, 34. Matthew 20, 30, 34. "And behold, two blind men sitting by the road, when they heard that Jesus was passing by, cried out, saying, 'Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David.' And they were told to basically quiet down." I mean, this is an important prophet. You don't trouble him. Who knows what people rationalized as being important at the time. But they cried the more. They raised their voices more. They were desperate for what might be possible, because obviously they had heard about who this man was. And so Jesus stood still and called him, verse 32, and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Lord, that our eyes may be opened." Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes. And immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. So observing this need, seeing their attitude, realizing they knew this was their only chance perhaps for the rest of their lives to have sight. He was moved inwardly to do for them what they had requested in this humble request. And of course, we are commanded too, as followers, to exercise this character quality. 1 Peter 3:8-9. Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. And this talking, of course, particularly about the household of God, those of us who are brothers and sisters in the church. Love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, and this applies both internally and externally to people out there, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you are called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. So we do, and the law of the garden says that we will have a harvest of that which we give out, that you may, in fact, inherit a blessing. Then, lastly, there is forgiveness. And forgiveness is something that is commanded, that is important. We find the specific command that Christ gives that leads to the development of this quality in Matthew 18. But first, we will go to John. See, the response to an offense that we give in forgiveness is giving a response so that the offender is led to see the power of God's love in our lives, because only a person who has God's love is going to go out and really forgive another individual. In among human beings in general, that's just not the way things are done. It needs to be in us. And if it's in us and we forgive, the person might see that. And that's one of the reasons to forgive, is so they can see that. They have that glimpse of light into how God loves people. John 3:16, of course, it's a very often quoted verse. The Gospel of John, chapter 3 and verse 16, where we're told, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." This awareness that we have of the value that God has placed in us, of his mercy upon us, is what leads us then to do things in a different way. 1 John 4:9, another little side note on this, 1 John 4 and verse 9. "In this the love of God was manifested toward us," and he's now speaking to people that are in God's church, "that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him." And obviously, living through him, we're going to exercise compassion as he did. We're going to grow into that ability, and we're going to exercise forgiveness as he did. It's an interesting thing. I'm going to go back to Matthew 18:21-22. That God shows by his creation that he is the greatest scientist there is, and within the sciences, he definitely is the greatest mathematician. And yet, to human eyes, his formulas do not seem to add up sometimes. Matthew 18:21-22. Look at this formula. "Then Peter came to him and said, 'Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to 7 times? That's a lot of offenses in one day. Because we are told not to let the sun go down in our wrath. So we're talking about one day's worth of offenses. 7 times, it's quite a bit. "And Jesus said to him, 'I do not say to you up to 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. So in this formula, 70 times 7 equals 0. It doesn't work very well in arithmetic, but that's what you have to do. It has to equal 0 for you to forgive the individual and clear the record completely, to hold nothing back, to hold no grudge, to hold no ill toward the individual. In this case, he's talking specifically of a brother, either a tribal brother or in the family. or in this case in the church. To hold absolutely no negative emotions to that individual means we have to come down to zero. 70 times 7 equals zero. And only then is God satisfied. Only then will he look at us and says, you've done well. Luke 17:4 has a little bit of a tidbit more of how this process works. Luke 17:4, where we read, and if he sins, this brother, against you 7 times in a day, and 7 times in a day, or maybe the extraordinarily high number of 70 times 7, comes to you or returns to you saying, I repent. And here comes a command on the imperative. You shall forgive him. 7 times or 70 times 7 still equals zero. Forgiveness is healing both for the offender and for the offended person. Matthew 6:14. I had this thing here and I didn't put it down and I lost my place. Matthew 6:14. Or maybe I'm forgetting how to read. For if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will forgive you also. So you sow forgiveness, God gives you a harvest of forgiveness. But if you do not forgive men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. So if that is what you sow, that is also what you reap. If you want forgiveness, you have to forgive. It's interesting because we can be, in the case of the servant that wouldn't forgive his fellow servant a small amount, even though his master had forgiven him a horrendous fortune, just an impossible amount for him to ever repay. He went out and took it all for granted, and not considering his situation, wouldn't forgive a small offense, a small loss that he would have from his brother. And God was not happy and basically told him, you're going to be jailed, and you're going to be given to tormentors. Now, literally, that happens in jail, but it also literally happens to us internally. If we do not forgive, all kinds of physiological and biochemical changes occur that act very much against us. We are empowering somebody who offended us by not forgiving, making it much worse than the offense itself would have caused originally. So there's this warning, then back to Luke 7 and the verse prior to that, where he makes it quite clear. And he says, Luke 17. There you go. I'm having trouble in reading my own writing. That's bad. Luke 17. Okay, so we read verse 4. Now, a warning. Take heed to yourselves. If your brother sins against you, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him. Another command on the imperative from the king. These are the things that we need to do in order to take through the path that is narrow, the path where sensitivity and compassion combined to lead us to want to forgive someone, because God commands it, because it's good for the person that committed the offense, because it is good for us who have been the offended to demonstrate this quality of Christ's character, to follow in his footsteps, to be a true follower of Christ, to show the individual that offended us that in spite of that, we forgive. And that is what we've learned from our master, that we don't do that because we're such good human beings, but because basically our master expects it, and we are happy to contemplate that and then act on it. And that shows an individual that there's something different about us. Many people in the past, we've read, will react to how members act during the feast in unusual ways to the people who interact with them, but they realize these people are different. And this should be a common occurrence in our lives on a daily basis to show people what's going on. So one of the things that happens in that tormenting is a defilement that happens in the human being. The Greek is miaino, which means to sully, to taint, to contaminate. Now, in any chemical reaction, when you have contaminants, it's not good, right? Things don't go well, particularly when high purity of a reaction is needed. If there are contaminants there, it doesn't work. The other thing that happens is that the contamination then impacts how we feel, impacts our health, impacts everything inside of us, and it leads to a hardening of the heart that is not good in the sense that we lose sensitivity, akin to leprosy. In leprosy, you start losing sensitivity and the extremities, whatever leprosy is showing up, and you hurt yourself and you don't feel it. And so it's dreadful because you can cut yourself and not pay attention until all of a sudden you see that there is blood coming out because you don't feel the pain. This is something that lack of forgiveness, which ends up equating to bitterness, can cause in us. So we are in a situation then where we are told that we will be blessed as merciful individuals because we will obtain mercy. But to develop mercy, to become merciful, we need to develop the sensitivity. We need to develop the compassion that leads to action. And we need the willingness of heart to forgive God. And why? Because unlike the servant who didn't consider the enormity of the forgiveness that his master had given to him, we need to consider, particularly as Passover approaches, but certainly during the year as well, we need to consider the great, great forgiveness that God has given us, both in the past and what happens daily with God forgiving us as we request. Immortality is only given to those who develop God's character. God has to be able to trust us implicitly, 100%. And the attitude, this particular attitude of being, must be developed in us by careful cultivation and obedience to Christ's commands so that we become more and more like him. Literally, in the sense of a physical transformation, as well as transformation of the heart and the spirit by obeying the commands that lead to the acquisition of sensitivity, compassion, forgiveness, and a couple other characteristics. In life now, we must be cultivating this attitude of being so that people see more and more of Jesus Christ in us and eventually realize that is who we were, true followers of the true Messiah.